are listening to FBC Perspective, a podcast from First Baptist Church, Kelowna.
Hello from First Baptist Church in Kelowna. This is Pastor Kevin Green, and I'm your host. I'd like to welcome you to our Perspective podcast, where we talk about things that help us live better lives. Today, I'm with Doug Ward, and Doug is a pastor in Ottawa at Kanata. Oh boy, I asked Doug how to say that, but Kanata?
Kanata Baptist Church.
Yeah. Kanata Baptist Church. And he's been there for 37 years. He's also an associate with Arrow Leadership, and he's a parliamentary and diplomatic liaison for Canadian Baptist Ministries. And I'm going to say that what this boils down to is this is a guy that is passionate for people and bringing out the best in them. So, Doug, welcome to the podcast.
It's great to be here.
Doug, I've known you in my capacity as a leader and pastor for a couple years now. And I know that you've taken a keen interest in me as a leader, and you want the best for me. You want to bring out the best, and you're interested in growth and all of that. And I know that. And I know that you deeply invest in people and you care deeply. And I know that I'm not alone in that. I know that you've probably taken a keen interest in I don't know how many people. And Doug, I want to know what drives you to do that.
Well, actually, I've wondered that myself at times, but I do know the answer. It's come down, it became very clear to me about 5 years ago after sort of sifting through my life, looking at the different things that I've been through. I was about the age of 41, had been in ministry probably 14 years since seminary. And I realized that no one had really taken any interest in me. What I mean by that is not a sort of a myopic that I needed that, but actually I did. So if you're looking at someone who's was in need of mentoring, someone who was in need of someone who took an interest in what they were sort of about, there were very, very, if that would have been a huge deficit in my life. I had a couple of people I could turn to in crisis, and I did have those people, but it did not go the opposite direction. I did go through a couple of crises at the end of my 30s and early 40s, and I found that I was hurting very deeply inside and wasn't even sure who to turn to. It flared up to the point that I just began to really seek out some people myself to gather around me, which put me into a relationship with two other guys who I've been meeting with for all these years since. But it also made me anxious that I didn't want to see that happen to other leaders. That's what started to drive me. Very initially, when I started to get involved with Arrow Leadership, which exists to really mentor and coach and grow leaders over time. It's a wonderful program, but I got involved with that and became a mentor coach and started to learn the skills of how you would do that. And that became a part of my leadership capacity that I felt I could develop. I just didn't want to see anyone else go through that where they had no one to really breathe into their life. So that was the driving force, really. When I look back on it, that has fueled me, not in a critical way or a heavy-handed way, but it's just something that I've enjoyed watching young leaders blossom when I take some interest in them and initiate some of those relationships. So that's where that began.
Yeah, I think a lot of leaders could probably relate to that. I mean, myself as a young pastor, I felt lonely in the same way. And one of the things that's difficult about pastoral leadership is that who do you talk to that you can trust?
Yep.
You're right. That's right. So that's a challenge for a lot of us. And
that's correct.
Yeah. So you've been involved in training and mentoring leaders during your ministry. What ways have you done that?
Well, certainly in the church that I serve, which was really a house church when I arrived here in Ottawa. Kanata is a suburb of Ottawa. It's on the west end, outside the Green Belt. It was a little village of about 20,000 people. It's now about 180,000. It just exploded. When I first came here, I realized I had a fresh start. My first two ministry positions were rocky. and difficult. And that's another whole story. But when I arrived here, sort of in a house church, it became critical that I began to lead in a very different way. I had a chance to start afresh. And in that way, we began to do collegial leadership. And my task has always been to draw folks around me and to invest in them. And that kind of that ethos began to invest itself in the church that I serve. I've been able to stay in the same church for 37 years. That's
impressive.
My friend, well, it's impressive, but in actual fact, I've been pastoring 5 different churches in that time. As the church began to mature and grow in numbers and in the breadth of ministry, it went through the early stages, and then broke through a 90 barrier, and then we began hiring staff and 150, and then plus and up to 300-400, and you get into a very different way of doing things. One of my abilities natively has been to be able to deal with change well, so that was helpful for me. But the key in leadership at this church that I serve has always been the strength of its corporate leadership. It's cooperative leadership. It's coordinated leadership capacity built into the people who we've drawn into positions, not of authority, but of we've never made a decision without collegial decision-making 100%. We've moved ahead. We've changed our structure so that we have a whole plethora of leaders who lead in all the different ministry areas that the church serves in. Without my assistance but it's been with my blessing and calling out those gifts, we get to the point where we're doing discipleship around the leadership issue itself, one's calling primarily as a believer in Jesus, and then one's secondary calling to a task of either ministry or influence in the place that you serve. That's always been undergirding what we do here at KBC. And it's done well for us. And I think that's been my driving thing with leadership development, has been to see that happen in the local church. So I've never really been interested in denominational or large entities. I've really been concerned most of all with the local church in its neighborhood, serving the felt needs of what's going on right around us, and having the people of God see where God is working, listening to them, forming ministry cadres where we would begin to develop ministry emphases in certain areas. So KBC has done some very creative ministry, but I will put it down to the quality of the people that are around me. My job is to set the table and to guard the process to make that happen. I think that's what I'm supposed to do as a leader.
So that's interesting, because I know that there's lots of talk about leadership, and it's always interesting. It almost implies that we all should be leaders in some ways. And I guess I think there's some truth to that. We might be called on to show leadership somewhere all the time. But is leadership something that just everyone should try to develop, or is it something for a few? I'm just wondering if you can expand on that. Who is leadership for?
Every single believer has a dual calling. One is to the affiliation and love and centering our life around Jesus. Secondarily, no matter what you're doing, whether you're a high school teacher, whether you work in a government office, whether you work high tech, those would be the two biggest areas in Ottawa, you have a place of influence. Therefore, you are a leader in that way. You have a place of influence. That's one of the definitions of leadership. But in certain spheres, you are placed in a position of leadership where you have some constraints and you also have some responsibilities to make sure that the mission and values of an organization, for instance, are carried through to the optimum level and that you stay on mission. So leadership, in essence, in a place like a church, is a core group of people who believe and decide on and believe in the core mission and vision. Sometimes that comes through a pastor's vision that he may have for that community. in our case, it came from the grassroots up. It comes from the bottom up. What do we see collectively that we can agree that we should be moving into as a ministry focus or at worship or whatever? And it tends to come from the granular up. We would have many times where we do visioning exercises with a disparate group of 25 or 30 people, plus the leadership in the church. We would call them together. We would dream and scheme together. Then we would go away, and I would actually write a white paper based on a one-pager of, I think this is what I'm hearing. That would then go back to our leadership and be churned through. We've done that over many, many iterations over the church's life. So it comes from the grassroots, but it's led, the system or the way we do it is led by the leadership, who are literally called, and we call out our leaders very carefully. We split it actually in two things. Half of our leaders would be people who would be good detail people who look at the granular things. The other half we intentionally recruit. They're the blue sky people. They dream, they think big, they see things from 60,000 feet. You put those people in the room who know that that's what they represent, who know that that's where their gifts are, and some incredible stuff comes out. The details of how are you going to do that? What's your business plan to make that happen? How's this going to affect other ministries? And then the dreamers and others who are going, of course we can do this. Of course we have the resources to do this. With humility and grace, when those two things come together in a church life or any other place, you got some real dunamis, some real dynamite waiting to go off.
So it's interesting. I just want to go back a little bit to your opening about how you talked about feeling kind of lost and alone as a leader. And I've been there too. And I just wonder, you know, as leaders in the church, as we bring people up in the congregation, do you think they feel that way too? Like, is this just a human need really to feel like someone's noticed you and wants to build into you?
Yes. And yeah, there are some people that rise up in church life, in church leadership positions, who are clearly doing that for ego. Or might I say this, in every other area of their life, they have no control at all.
Right, right.
And they come into a leadership position in a church, and it's obvious, and it's a place they can exert leadership or authority. It may end up to be wrong-headed.
Yeah.
At times, you have to weed that out. And I would confess, as a pastoral leader, there are times when I've not removed, but suggested that perhaps that isn't working out like it should. Over time, you get to know your people. I used to take people golfing. That's the easiest way I could find out what their temperament was by the fourth hole. I could tell exactly what they how they would handle stress. But I think you have to be careful in that way. This is done out of humility. But you do need some tough-minded people in leadership. There have been four or five chances or opportunities at KBC where we went into some pretty deep crises. Not necessarily of our making, exterior things that arrived that challenged us at the deepest level. I needed the best people possible to navigate those things. And it happens.
Yeah. You know, and I've... in my journey as a leader, being aware of myself and my own struggles as a leader, my own needs, it always seems like there's this battle or this balance between the inner life and the mechanics of being a leader. And I feel like one of the things we gravitate to easier is maybe the mechanics of a leader, like, you know, some systems and ways of leading. But in my experience, that inner life will always squeak out, you know, some form of dysfunction. So can you tell me, in your approach to working with people, how you balance that and how much attention you pay to that inner life?
Total attention. The greatest thing we find at Arrow Leadership, and these are folks who are proven leaders. They're not leader wannabes. They come with a great pedigree. They come and they, in a class of 24 people, we'll have people who are in very, very important positions of leadership in a Christian ministry of some kind, or even in a business. The greatest deficit we find when we first start working is the area of spiritual formation. Getting back to the original calling and the investment of their life and the spiritual disciplines and keeping focused on what is most important to keep their own souls healthy, and the ability to pass that on to others and to be generators of healthy souls in their midst. If I do anything as a pastor, it's taking care of my leaders, the core leaders. It's so critical. So building into regular meetings and other things, not a thorough analysis of the soul, but literally bringing those things into being, training people or teaching people the spiritual disciplines, keeping them strong in that area so that the expectations don't overwhelm one's ability to deal with it inside that person's deepest needs, to be able to focus on someone's needs that are so maybe a little bit on the ego side that they need this too much.
Yeah.
But that's the biggest deficit we see in young leaders and older leaders. So I think that's something to really focus on and develop, let alone the sheer capacities and capabilities of leadership skills, some basic skills that people need in order to function, skills on how to administrate, skills on how to develop communication patterns, skills on how to use one's personal time. All those things we find in leaders, and there are certain things that just bind a leader and hold them down, anchor them. But most of those things, the anchors are found in some unmet needs in the spiritual condition.
Yeah, and it really comes out too, because I know that one of the challenges of being a leader is that when something goes great, you give away the credit. And when something goes bad, you own the credit for that.
Exactly.
And I guess my impression is that unless you're ready for that inside, that's an area that's going to be really messy for your organization or your church if you're not ready to give away credit and own the bad stuff.
You must have someone you can unburden on. I have been very fortunate. We have a two-pronged leadership. We have a governing council who does all the policy and other things, and we have elders. The elders of the church I serve have been so caring. Every single meeting, how are you doing, Doug? They ask this of all the pastors. They do take care of us. And if we trust them and we trust one another, that can be hugely important as I bring whatever burden I'm carrying or whatever I'm struggling with. But I also am careful to have these two gentlemen that I spoke of earlier, and then other folks in my life who can speak into my life and have the freedom to do so. Now, that it does take courage because this is some pretty deep stuff, both in my, you know, in marriage and in my family life and in the things that frustrate me, the arrows that come because you are a target as a leader. You must have a place that you can process those things to get good advice. Up to the age of 42, I did not have that.
Right.
That really crippled me. And I've had to really discover what it is that I need to have in my own life and what I can offer to others in order to see that happen.
So in your journey with leaders and mentoring leaders, have you seen some common themes that just seem to pop up over and over again in leadership development or blind spots in their lives?
Yep. Loneliness. I will say this statistic very carefully. About 2/3 of the young leaders I spent time with would say they have no real soul friendships. Hmm. That's a devastating thing. Whether it's 2/3 or 67%, it is so critical that there be someone in your life. I'm not talking about your spouse either. I'm assuming that there's some things going on there that are positive, but it's someone outside that. Expectations, false expectations of what's really required of a leader, especially in a more traditional environment where this is what a pastor does. That's becoming less and less an issue these days, thankfully for that, as the church matured. Mm-hmm. To be intentionally pursuing learning and looking at alternative ways of discipling people, There aren't a lot of models out there. Now that the internet is so rapidly accessible, those models are available, but many of them are not helpful to us at the church I serve. They're based on models that we cannot adopt, but we can do pieces of that. So there are things buried in us as leaders that can be real blockages in growing our fellowship and growing personally.
So why do you think loneliness is such a common theme? I mean, is it related to trust, like who you can trust in your organization, or is it because people get so wrapped up in their work that they don't go outside their organization? Why is it so common?
I trust this isn't true anymore, but in seminary, I was taught that you do not get close to people in your own congregation.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Seriously.
Yeah.
I rejected that from the get out. That is impossible, as if you're showing favorites or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you have to, that's just not the way it should be. We need companionship. We need to be offering people just that a wonderful sense of Christian community. I think the greatest gift that is missing in the local church these days is hospitality. Yeah. I think we've lost it. It was the glue that held the early church together. Hospitality. Most of the house churches were in literally houses of people, collective people, collective families, where hospitality was the sine qua non of the way people function. In our cocooning society and everything else that's going on, we've really struggled with that. In the present moment that we're dealing with all the social distancing, it has shown itself to be a radical human need. It's screaming at us, and that is going to benefit us on the other side of this. I don't think we have to make a case anymore that this is an important thing. I'm not sure people know how to do it well anymore, but I think it's an opportunity to say, we need to start all over again and figure out how to welcome the stranger, welcome each
other
into our communities.
You know, I'm still thinking about your statement about how we were taught in seminary not to get close to people in your church. And I think organizations too, I mean, that's an organizational style of leadership as well, isn't it? Like your senior leader, CEO shouldn't be great friends with people in the organization. And I guess my struggle with that is that I still think there's some tension there, because I do recall times where I got close to people in my congregation and probably didn't have enough tact and said some things that came back to bite me later. So I feel a tension there, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Like I hear that, but on the other end, there's the leaders who are just careless. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I feel like that's a really difficult world to navigate that we need guides in. I mean, I guess that's what you're doing, is helping guide people through stuff like that. But I found that tough.
That's right. There'll always be people who will misunderstand that. Why is he spending more time with these folks than us? That is not my responsibility. My calling is to make sure that everyone who potentially becomes part of our fellowship is in some kind of social relationship with other people and growing. Yeah. They can say no to that. I think we're probably batting about 40% of our folks involved in some small group. It takes a lot to get your congregation as a Christian leader above that number.
Yes.
But nonetheless, it is still our core responsibility. It's my core responsibility to make sure that my wife and I are in a place where we are growing in a healthy relationship with a smaller group of people who we are accountable to, and who understand our pastoral needs, and understand that we are in a peculiar position when we are in a group, where we have to be sometimes careful about the confidences we carry. But the small group I belong to understand that. So we're very circumspect as leaders about confidentiality issues. That's not a concern of ours. Oh, it is a concern, but it's something we hold to. But nonetheless, I need to be pretty candid. I know you would do this, and I in the pulpit, there are times when you just say, here's how I'm doing this week.
Right. Yeah.
Here's what I'm coping with. We don't do it all the time. We're not constantly showing ego in that way, but we show a sense of humanity and honesty and integrity, and people really, really respond to that. When the first part of the COVID thing came down, I think about 2 months into it, I was preaching. I said, you know, folks, about every fourth day, I just bottom out. Like, it's really hard for me to keep going momentum. I was deluged with comments after, people going, so you're feeling the same way.
Right, right.
And for me, that's like, I mean, that doesn't harm my relationship with them. It's human. But yeah. Here's how I deal with it. And I went on to say, here's how I'm coping with it. But nonetheless, hey, who are we? Really?
You know, and I hear you. I mean, it sounds like vulnerability. And I actually have been really helped by something I heard Brené Brown say about personal courage. Like, vulnerability is different from just disclosure, which I think a lot of people think vulnerability means just disclosing things. So I feel like as a leader, I've got to find a way to be vulnerable, which is personal courage, and modeling that and putting myself out there, but also being discerning in my disclosure. Because yes. They're not the same thing, are they?
No, they're not. But we are weathering the storm with everyone else, and we're walking with them. But we do know the power of the Holy Spirit to transform. We also know the anchors that are anchoring our own soul sometimes in a negative way. I think we have to be honest about those things. We have to have the wisdom and discernment to know when to say certain things. There are times that a Christian leader needs to be prophetic and needs to draw out the prophetic gifts in the congregation.
Yeah.
Who are the voices who we need to hear from disparate backgrounds that we need to bring to the table? It's up to me as a pastoral leader to bring those people sometimes to the fore and have them speak into the body, and I'm the one who will broker that to happen, because that needs to be heard. It's an important part of the body.
So what do you think is the difference, or is there a difference between a great leader and an average leader?
That's a very good question. I'm not into quantification, so I'm not even sure how to answer that. I think probably the greatest leaders are the ones who go unnoticed, who in their context are doing some stellar things that are never on the internet, aren't on a blog anywhere, but they've been stick-to-itive in the people that they are ministering to and developing. I am a firm believer in long-term ministry, not just because I have been in that, but I know what that means to nurture people through the vicissitudes of life and all the things they go through, and to do that with whole family units in a community, a neighborhood you love, you've got to know. So you're not necessarily a regional church, but in that neighborhood, you know exactly what's going on. That is your calling. That's who you are. And I think it takes a great amount of humility to work yourself to the background. That you're always putting someone else in a place of leadership and listening to what they have to say, and you're always putting them forward, and seeing yourself as just lifting people up, not leading the charge.
Right.
Although there are times when we've done fundraising in the church or other things, you have to sort of take some leadership and forthrightness and accelerating the vision. I get that. But I also do that with a grain of salt, saying, you know, folks, you know what I'm doing right now, right?
Yeah.
You know I'm leading the charge, and I'm in this with you. And someone needs to vocalize these things. So here I am today. I think that's great leadership.
So do you think an average leader can become a great leader? And what's that journey like? I mean, I guess it depends what you call a great leader, but I mean, to me, it sounds like a lot of interior work, not necessarily just mechanics.
Yeah. I think you have to come under the, let me just use the word mentoring for a moment. I think you have to be in some kind of relationship or set of relationships where your own deficits, your own tendencies can be surfaced so that you can see where you might need to improve. People that can speak into your life and say, why do you do that?
Right.
And that you would have a chance to offer without that going any further than, are you sure you want to do that?
Yeah.
I mean, one of my favorites, you know, one of my favorite things when I'm mentoring a young leader is, are you sure you want to do that? And their first response is, what do you mean? Are you sure you want to do that? What are you saying? Are you sure you want to do that? Okay, let's take a look at some alternatives. Let's take a look at some scenarios. Let's take a look at some other things. I don't have to say you shouldn't be doing that, but a person who is not teachable, who is not in a place where they're receptive and willing to look at some things and laugh at themselves.
Yeah, right.
Or even cry over something that they've done.
Yeah.
Is not going to grow. And I can pick those folks up pretty quickly. And I could say that they're not going to be a great leader because, or a better leader, let's put it that way, because they're not in a place of growth. If Arrow Leadership is anything, we spend a whole year with people and that's all we do with them is build relationships so that we can look at their capacity and their competencies and their spiritual condition and begin to see where some of the things are that could be growth areas and what leadership plan they might want to put together to get more competent in a certain area. But generally, if you don't have that in your life, I don't think you're going to go further than your own inadequacies.
Wow. Well, it sounds like a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
To me, it almost echoes the spiritual journey. It's just that it's a bit of a, it has a public implications, but everyone has to do that interior work. I mean, as disciples of Christ, we all want people to do that interior work. And that's a tough journey.
On that issue, let me read you a quote. Now, you and I know that have heard this before. It's by Parker Palmer.
Okay.
I'll give you a quick definition of a leader, he says. A leader is a person who has an unusual degree of power to project on other people his or her shadow or his or her light. A leader is a person who has an unusual degree of power to create the conditions under which other people must live and move and have their being. Conditions that can either be as illuminating as heaven or as shadowy as hell. A leader is a person who must take special responsibility for what's going on inside him or herself, inside his or her consciousness, lest the act of leadership create more harm than good.
Mm.
I've adhered to that definition by Palmer. And there you bring up, as you just said, the interior nature, what's going on.
Yeah.
We will project that inevitably.
And yeah, people think they're hiding it, but it comes out, doesn't it?
It will eventually, yes.
Yeah.
And people will respond with genuineness and with compassion, and actually will take care of us if they see our vulnerabilities.
Right. Doug, are there development or assessment tools that you like? I mean, two tools that I really like are StrengthFinders and the Enneagram, which sound like very different things. I mean, StrengthFinders is by Gallup, right? And and Enneagram is just this ancient tool. But I find that they work really well together. Do you have experience with tools that you like?
StrengthFinders is great. That would be a tool that we'd used. I've used some basic things in the Myers-Briggs, some testing you can do just to get a sense of your personality typologies. I have a couple of tools that I use in leadership styles, just to give people a sense of you're more like this than that. Those are some areas, some things I found and I have in my office. I know the Enneagram has taken the world by storm. I haven't got into it personally, but I have many people and friends who have, and they swear by it. They think it's a good marker of where to start as to where my personality may be leading me and some of the deficits and some of the things I don't do really well.
Yeah.
We use Berkman, which is a tool at Arrow, which really does the interplay between how I'm leading and what I can do to accelerate the people around me because of my particular strengths and how I would work in a certain context. That's an expensive tool, but in the local church, we use StrengthFinders and other things like that, which can help. Yes.
So, you know, in case someone's listening who doesn't think they're a leader, and I think not all of us are leaders at this point in our lives, but are followers, I guess, can you talk about what it means to be a good follower, maybe just briefly? And I just always think that somehow, if you're not a good follower, you probably won't be a very good leader. Mm-hmm. You know, so I just wonder if you can just briefly touch on the people who are listening that want to support their leaders, what that looks like.
Well, it certainly isn't blind acceptance of everything someone says, or anyone in a leadership position, or anyone in a church would say. I'd want to bring it down to the local level. The term leader can be bandied around in a very damaging way. To say that everyone is a leader sends the wrong message, I think.
Right.
I think there are leaders positionally and others who show leadership giftedness in their ability to influence in a certain context. In that way, everyone is an influencer in their context. Whether you are a single mother in a home, whether you are a school teacher in a high school context, whether you are someone who's working in a government office of 45 people, you have a sphere of influence. And you are the only one in that sphere who can speak Holy Spirit, God-given truth in that particular context. Hmm. No one else can do that. Hmm. In that way, everyone is a quote-unquote leader.
Yeah,
they're showing a position of influence. There is no one who is off the who's off the grid in that area. Every single person, I know in our church and every young Christian has that place. And one of my questions to them when I'm having coffee with them will be, "How are you doing in your own context? I mean, your own spiritual life, but tell me about your work environment. Tell me about your home. Tell me about where you." Can breathe life. That is taking leadership and guidance in your own place of work or ministry or home or wherever. My wife's a high school teacher. She is a pastor in the high school. Hmm. She is a person showing influence and leadership for Jesus in the high school context that I can never even get close to. Likewise, a cabinet minister, likewise, anyone in any position. So I would lean into anyone who's listening, where is it that you have a place that you can make a difference? That is excellent leadership under the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, and I guess I reflect on that too, is that the fact is that I'm called to be a leader in certain spheres, but man, I better be a follower too. And I think the idea of follower is frowned upon in our society a bit. And I appreciate you saying not blind following, but we all need to be followers. I mean, if I'm not following anyone, what kind of a leader am I, right? I mean, we've all got to be willing to follow someone in some way.
Yep.
So
that's true. And that's, of course, another whole discussion.
Yeah.
I mean, the basic followership is we are a disciple of Jesus. So absolutely. How are we growing as his disciples? So that would be the basic thing. With that is a built-in humility and a built-in teachability and a built-in sense of collegiality in community. So it's if it's in a church, we know that a follower in a church is someone who is willing to trust the leadership and willing to stick with the body.
Yeah.
Through thick and thin.
Yeah.
But it depends on the transparency of that leadership.
Yes,
it does. That they're listening constantly to the body and to the disparate voices, negative or positive, and are willing to shift and move and listen.
Doug, do you have any last words for us? No pressure. Well, you don't have to.
No, your own. Thank you for your courage in just hosting times like this for your people and for others who are listening. It's a very, very important thing. We need to be as transparent as we can. We need to have people who are spreading some really healthy thoughts out there. So mm-hmm. This has been wonderful. As you and I know, we are also in some other relationships where we have some care for one another.
Yes.
So leaders need to hold on to each other at times.
Yeah.
Learn how to laugh, learn how to cry together. Mm. And I appreciate that about you.
Thank you, Doug. And thank you so much for being on this podcast. It's been a real pleasure to see you over Zoom and have this conversation and just to hear your thoughts on leadership. So thank you.
You bet. Goodbye from Ottawa. And
So hey, thank you for listening. I hope that you feel better equipped to deal with life than you did before. And it's been great to talk about things that help us live better lives. And I look forward to connecting with you on our next podcast. Until next time, keep the faith and live in hope.
Thank you so much for listening. Please subscribe so that you can catch all our future episodes. You can search for us as FBC Perspective on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.